Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Bop, bop, bop. Hello, everyone. Welcome to tonight's show. This is your host, Kim Justice, on Brain Injury Radio Network. I want to thank the show sponsor, Lash Publishing. You can find them at lapublishing.com. A couple of months ago, April, I believe, they launched a new magazine called Brain Injury Journey, Hope, Help, and Healing. It was going to come out 6 times a year, every other month, and there is a free online version. You can't beat the price. So I encourage you to go to lapublishing.com. On your left side, you go down just a little bit, few lines, and you'll see Brain Injury Journey. When you click that page, it'll take you directly to the magazine, where you'll first have a choice of buying the hard copy, a subscription, or if you scroll down to the middle, you'll find a place for the free online version of the magazine, and I strongly encourage you to sign up for it. It's got some wonderful articles, very thought-provoking pieces, both for survivors and their caregivers. And next month, in August's edition, yours truly will have an article in the magazine, so be sure to sign up before then. Okay, let's see. I'll take care of a few other pieces of housekeeping, and then I'm very anxious to get my guest on tonight. I want to remind everyone here that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week with 10 different hosts. So, and same phone number, which is 424-243-9540. You can listen to the shows through your telephone or on the computer. I'll be reciting that number again later after the interview in the event you'd like to call and ask questions or make comments when we're through with our guest. These shows are also immediately archived in the on-demand section of Brain Injury Radio, so if you miss part of the show or you just need that little bit of extra support, feeling a little out of sorts with your challenges, I encourage you to go to the on-demand section of Brain Injury Radio and take a look at those shows by subject and host. We each bring something different to the table. Also want to just quickly mention the peer-to-peer support line we're in the process of putting together. The website for that is the number 4PEER11.org, 4PEER11.org. That will give you information how to call in to the survivor hotline. It'll also give you information on how to volunteer. Eventually, we're hoping this line will be a 24/7 proposition, but I think they're at about 10 hours a day now. And the commitment is only 4 hours a month. If you want to volunteer to reach out and help another survivor, or just have a little extra sense of purpose added to your life, that website will show you both how to utilize the peer-to-peer line as well as volunteer and maybe work on the peer-to-peer line. So I think that pretty well covers most of my housekeeping tonight. With that, I'm going to introduce my guest tonight, and I'm going to ask her to forgive me ahead of time. One thing I did, it's been I've been having a challenging time personally in my personal life a little bit, and we had a very nice talk, and I can certainly relate to her subject matter, that's for sure. But I never asked her about pronouncing her name correctly, so she can catch me on that in just a moment. But my guest tonight is Janelle Breezy Biagioni, RPC. She is an author, speaker, and counselor with expertise in grief, loss, life transitions, and brain injury. Janelle has significant experience with brain injury in her own family, and she has worked for the last decade as editor of Headline magazine and with the Cridge Center for the Family Brain Injury Services, providing community service. She's the author of A Change of Mind, One Family's Journey Through Brain Injury, and her upcoming book, which I believe just got released, we'll double check with her, called Life Losses, Healing for a Broken Heart. Both of those books sound like a must-read for most of the people out there in our audience. Again, A Change of Mind, One Family's Journey Through Brain Injury, and her upcoming book, Life Losses, Healing for a Broken Heart. She's also a contributor to Brain Injury Journey magazine. So by all means, visit Janelle at her own website, which is www.lifelosses.com. You can also find her at the Lash Publishing website, which is www.lapublishing.com. I will put those sites for you in the chat room in just a little bit, as well as we'll be talking about them a little bit more. But with that, I would like to bring on Janelle. Did I get your name too badly?
It was very close, Kim. Thank you. It is Breeze, like the wind, and Biagioni. But you were very
Biagioni.
Close. Nobody gets it right.
Biagioni. Okay, I had to get the accent in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you're quite the accomplished writer.
Well, thank you. That certainly wasn't what I had started out to do with my life. I was actually planning to be an accountant when things took a drastic turn. However, I always enjoyed writing, and people, when they read what I had written, particularly after my husband was injured, encouraged me to put it into a book format. So that's kind of how it got started.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of where I'd like to start. We all, there isn't one of us out there who hasn't suffered a loss of some type or had a broken heart. And of course Kubler-Ross had the first made the first notation or the first study that brought up those five stages of grief, and we've all gone through them before, probably going to be through them again at some point. But I'm very interested to hear your story, because not only are you credentialed and a counselor in this area, but I think what started, what the impetus was for you to go on down this path you've gone down was your own personal experience in your family. So if I am mistaken there, correct me, and otherwise, why don't you start with the beginning of your journey down this path?
Okay, thank you. No, you're absolutely correct. It was the journey that put me on the path to become a writer, a speaker, and then recently in the last 3 years to become a registered professional counselor to help people who are on the journey of grief and loss and wanting to rebuild their life. I should say that, you know, some of what people are going to hear is a little bit alarming because it is kind of a very dark story, and it isn't really the normal story either, but it is my story, and it's what happened, and it's what led me on this journey where I could reach out to help other people. The push was my husband's injury and subsequent death, but that was not the first. And, you know, I should always explain to people that I have really been involved with family and friends who sustained brain injury and living with that since I was 17 years old. And that is with my first husband. His brother was born with cerebral hemorrhages and has some significant cognitive challenges, and I've supported him since I met them when I was 17, and him and I are both in our 50s now, and he lives independently, but at times requires our support, and that's what we do. So I did have the experience and still have that experience as an extended family member, and what that is like to want to help somebody who needs help and to have to go the distance with them. My other experience was with my friend Ruth, and she had been injured 3 years before my husband. My husband and her husband were both members in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and her husband was my boss. And Ruth and I were just very good friends, and when she was injured, she was hit in a crosswalk when her and her daughter were crossing the street. She suffered a significant head injury and subsequent personality change. And for whatever reason, Ruth and I were able to maintain our relationship, and it grew more. And I always give Ruth credit for being the one who taught me the most about what happens inside the four walls of a family and how that affected her as a wife and a mother and in the community and not being able to go back to work. So Ruth really set the tone for me, taught me a lot, and I'm forever grateful for her. 2 years after Ruth was injured, my brother sustained a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which was caused by an interaction of prescription drugs and, was medical error, unfortunately. And from the time that that happened, they told us that he would not survive. He was 39 years old, and it took time for his body to shut down. So he was in a coma for 2 weeks before his body just quit, and they had to take him off life support. So I've had that experience then as a sibling to have somebody with a massive brain injury and the loss of losing somebody who was very dear to our family. And then the following year after my brother, my husband was injured while riding the police motorcycle and was hit by a car. He was on his way to an alleged stabbing. He is responding to that. He had his siren and lights were on the motorcycle. The elderly woman that hit him, she really just did not see him, and she failed to do a shoulder check and crossed two lanes of traffic and hit him. He did everything he could in his training to keep himself safe, and we're talking 23 years ago, so the equipment wasn't the same. He was wearing a helmet that didn't have a full face shield. They weren't allowed to in those days. And when he went over her vehicle, he skidded up a handicap ramp and smashed into a stop sign, which literally split his face. And it was that action. He did have a contusion on the brain from where the helmet cracked, but it was where he split his face. He was actually thrown over onto his back, aspirated the blood, and went into cardiac arrest. So all of his brain damage was caused from oxygen deprivation, and it was fairly extensive. So I had the experience as a spouse. So those 5.5 months following his injury, really, again, Ruth had given me some insight into what that may be like for our family. And I stumbled through so many things that her husband and her children were stumbling through and kind of the roadblocks about getting information and where do you get support. And in those days, there just really was not much out there. And I was just turning left, right, and center to try and get some help. At that time, when he was injured, Ruth began to have some other medical symptoms that were very disturbing, and they discovered that she had an inoperable brain tumor where she had initial surgery. And she died in October, so 5 months after my husband was injured. And then my husband died 2 weeks after Ruth died of a massive heart attack at home. So Ruth was 43, my husband was 37, my brother was 39. So very young people to
grieve. Yes.
And certainly was devastating on many levels for my family, for our extended family, and certainly the community of police officers and wives who were all very close together and had spent, you know, a majority of years together doing that kind of work. So I do say to people, you know, that is a very black story. It's the blackest of the black, and, you know, people shouldn't be afraid that if they have a brain injury, this is going to happen to them. I always want to, you know, ease people's mind about that, because we do know that people with brain injury can expect to live the same life expectancy as you or I, and they have different challenges, and each one has, you know, things that are unique to them that they struggle with and need support with. So I don't want to alarm people that. It is only my story. But it was in those 3 years with Ruth where I learned a great deal. It's in the 40-some-odd years with my brother-in-law that I've learned a lot about being an extended family, and in the 5.5 months with my husband to really learn. It was really an opportunity for me to see, to get a snapshot of what it was to be a spouse and a mother to two young children who then had to take on equal caregiving with me. Now, in those days, there was very little set up in the hospitals. You know, where I live in Victoria, British Columbia, we have a tremendous neuro ward. But 23 years ago, they didn't have that. And we lived in the Okanagan, so central BC, or middle, yeah, not really central, but the Okanagan. And they definitely were not set up to cope with behaviors of somebody coming out of a coma in the hospital. So my husband was in the hospital for about a week in Kelowna, which was an hour and a half north of us. And once he came out of the coma and they felt that he was stable, they transferred him back to where we lived. So he was there for another 3 weeks, and they really couldn't cope with him in the hospital. They, you know, his sleep pattern was disrupted. He was inappropriate sexually. In conversations with people, he was inappropriate. He had very bizarre behaviors. He was very aggressive towards me, physically, verbally abusive, very unlike the man that I had known since I was 17 years old and I was 33. So very upsetting, of course, for me, and no information as to why this was happening, how long it would happen. And the response that I kept receiving, and unfortunately it's still the response that people receive today, which is we have to wait and see. We have to wait and see. And it was so frustrating, and I know that Ruth's husband was told the same thing, and it's frightening to be told that.
Yes.
23 years later, I definitely have an appreciation of why that is said, and partly because, you know, what you may be told can look pretty grim, and then, you know, that isn't fair either, because I have been honored to witness people who have come through brain injury and been told that they'll never walk again, they'll never speak, they'll never be able to feed themselves, they'll never be able to return to work, and they have. And an example is a young woman that has lived with me now for about 8 years, and I was called to the hospital to speak with her when she sustained a brain injury in a snowboarding accident. She's a paramedic, and they said she would never return to work. And she was in a wheelchair probably 85% of the time when I went to see her, and my role was with the Courage was to set up a network of support for her in the community. I was so heartbroken to see this young woman in her 30s who was really just sitting with this blank look on her face, devastated, not knowing what was going to happen with her life, and they couldn't discharge her. She'd been in the hospital for a year. And they couldn't discharge her until she went to a family care home because she needed 24/7 support, and they didn't have a family care home. It bothered me so much, I took her home, and she definitely thought I was crazy, but she knew I was her ticket out of hospital. But I quickly made arrangements with the brain injury program, went through all the paperwork, got, you know, all the approvals, and I brought her home. And we did active rehab at home for her with her for 4.5 years. And she did return to work as a paramedic and, in fact, is moving to England to pursue other opportunities. And, you know, so she came from a wheelchair and she's walking, she's talking, she looks after herself, she can run, she drives an ambulance. You know, she's spot on with her work. And she had to regain all her licensing again. So
wow.
It wasn't a feat for her at all. So I really appreciate why people are told wait and see, and I almost appreciate that it's a good thing to be told that, because you just never can say never. So after my husband died, one of the things that had happened in those 5.5 months was I didn't know what to do for our family. I didn't know how to deal with his behavior, and he wasn't sleeping, and he was very childlike, and our daughters were 10 and 12 years old at the time, and he was much more of a child than they were. And that, and what that translated to was where I couldn't leave the room, and he'd be in tears, and very much like a toddler, some one time lying on the floor, hanging onto my leg, like, please don't leave me. Just, I couldn't go anywhere. So where this is where my children ended up having to kind of step up and be equal partner with me, because, you know, I'd have to say, could you just sit with Daddy while I get dinner ready, and he couldn't be alone. So I struggled to find out what was going to happen with our family. Part of me being an accountant or studying to be an accountant, I was in my third year of studies, and part being a police officer's wife, I knew what our legal system was like in Canada. And at that time, there was no reason to think that he would not live. So I knew that this court case probably wouldn't get into the courts for 7 or 8 years. And so part of me was like, okay, I'm not going to remember the fine details of how this has been for him, for me, for our children 8 years down the road. So I started to document everything in a journal. What happened was my husband quickly became suspicious of that, and he thought that I was recording all of these conversations and what he said and what we did during the day because I was going to have him institutionalized. Now, I didn't know how to take that fear away from him, so I went, took him to the bookstore, purchased him the identical journal that I had, and we just started a routine where he would write in his journal when I was writing. And then we would exchange the journals. So in the about 3 months that he was doing that, he kept 3 journals. And part of that was because his writing was very distorted and, you know, like scribbling across the page to learn to write again until he was able to refine his sentences and get, you know, better control of his motor skills. So he wrote for 3.5 months. I wrote for 3.5 months, and I kept 1 journal. I'm a much tinier writer than he was. And that helped him to see the benefit of journaling, but it also helped him to see and believe that I wasn't going to have him institutionalized. And he didn't even have a history when he came out of his coma. He didn't know what a wife was. He had no terms of reference. He didn't know what a wife was. He didn't know I was his wife. He didn't believe he was a police officer. He thought that he worked for the fisheries department. So through all of that process of keeping the journal, I was also having to give him his history again, which was very daunting, to get him to trust that what I said and who I said I was, I really was, right? So it was very therapeutic for both of us to keep the journals once he died. And for me, what became very therapeutic was that these were things in there sometimes that I just couldn't talk to anybody about. I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know how to express that I was sad or feeling hopeless and helpless. And I didn't know that my marriage could survive this change. And that really frightened me. So I had it in the journal. And for me, it was like saying it out loud. So I would let people read it after he died. And that's where the encouragement from people came and said, you need to write this book. So that's the book that you have in hand, A Change of Mind. It's actually the second version of it. But it, when people read it, they say, I feel like I was right there with you in all these conversations. And it was, because those were truly lifted right from the journal that I kept. So they were written in real time as it happened to us, and then I was able to put it into a book.
That's funny.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go on. Go on. I was going to say that's funny. I did that. My incident was in 95, and I journaled things and didn't make that into a book until the end of 2011 going into 2012. So it is nice to have those real-time notes from when you were actually in it.
Yeah, and I really felt and believed that I was keeping them for legal purposes, and then he died. So, and that was very unexpected for him to have a heart attack, and he died at home with our children there and myself. But I, when I was able to write the book, there were a very small group of people that lived in Penticton that had really been meeting on the street corner or coffee shops, and they'd put together a society for a brain injury society there to support one another. And they came looking for me once the book was published and asked if I would help them. So I did go on their board, and it became a very viable organization. It's still viable with housing and lots of programming, and we hired an executive director, and she was there for 15 years. And then from there, I went on to help on the provincial board and moved to Victoria to work with the provincial office. And I'm also a founding member of the national organization, the National Brain Injury Association of Canada. So I've been involved, remained involved for 23 years, and I'm very passionate about survivors and family members and what they're going through, to about the losses that arise from brain injury. And my presentations, all of it, have been based on that, to educate people on what I call the primary losses and the secondary losses, and helping people to understand how overlapping these losses are for the survivor and for their family member. Anybody connected to that person will experience the loss in a different way, and it can result in a loss for them. So I've dedicated my life to do that, and I'm very passionate about that, and I'm equally passionate about helping people heal from a broken heart when there's been a death. And that's where Life Loss is Healing for a Broken Heart is coming from. It's not published yet. It is finished. I'm looking at bringing that out on an ebook in my website, just to get it out there, and then we'll see what happens with it. But where I change
good
mind,
idea.
It's a snapshot of the 5.5 months that my husband lived, and I do talk about Ruth and her story, and I do speak about my brother Brian and what happened with him. And then Life Losses spans multiple losses and covers violent deaths, sudden and unexpected deaths, children in grief, divorce and separation and having to grieve that, and catastrophic injury. Because for me, I also work hard to educate people how extraordinary the mourning is in these situations when you are alive, when your spouse is alive. And in our situation, my husband had massive, you know, injuries, broken bones and lacerations and, you know, you name it, bruising. That all healed. And he actually looked fantastic about 2 months after the accident, but he was not the same person. And so where I really came to appreciate what Ruth and her husband and family went through was this false perception and expectation that people have. So they looked at us, and the perception was that we looked like the same family of four, the mom, the dad, the kids, the dog.
Yeah.
And they expected that we should behave as the same family. And we really couldn't. We couldn't, because we couldn't even be who we were in the family. And one example was the OT that worked with him. She was fantastic, a dear, dear friend, now a dear friend, but, you know, at the time I didn't know her before. And she came to meet with us, and she asked to speak with my husband by herself, and then she asked to speak with me. And so her question was, out of the gate, so how's your sex life? And I was a little taken back, and my response was, isn't that a little incestuous? And she said, well, what do you mean by incestuous? And I said, He's a little boy. He doesn't look at me as his wife, his lover, his equal partner anymore. I'm his mother. I'm his nurse. He can't relate to me in that way. So what she said to me, and has remained saying for years, is that forever educated her about just asking those questions and that expectation. Well, you look like you're the same family, so things must be getting back to normal, and when they're not, right? So other times I've explained it to people, what I call the Broadway play analogy. So if you think of him and I as the leading man and leading lady in a play, and I choose Broadway because typically those cast of people are together for 10 years to do that play, so much so that while they have rehearsals, they almost don't need to be cued. They know what the leading man's going to say. They know what they have to say, and it just goes off flawless. But I said, if that were us and he came in one night to the play and he didn't know his lines anymore and he didn't know where to stand anymore, not only would I not be able to play my part, but it's not going to make any sense to people looking at us as to what's happening. And so where he was the lead person in that relationship with me, he actually became the extra. And I say that with, you know, deepest affection for him. But he became the extra in the family. And my children became the lead characters because they had to help me get him through the day. So I'm still very passionate about educating people about that because that remains today a very big challenge for people, whether they have lots of family, they have a little bit of family, or it's just them, that if they look like they're the same person, then the outside world wants them to behave and to respond exactly as they had before, and that really is impossible. You're different.
And is the
experience alone, you're different.
Is that, yes, I agree. And is that primary, secondary that you were talking about, or maybe this is even unrelated, but it occurred to me as you were talking that you'd not only have a grief process for your husband who had dramatically changed, but as the child or the wife, I would have a grief process for myself, because all the roles have changed. As you pointed out, when any, even in a relationship of two or ten, you know, when the dynamic of one changes, it affects the dynamic of all. So the whole, it's not just the survivor that gets turned upside down, but the family as well. And it is really easy when people go back to looking normal, to have that expectation that they will be normal individually or as a family, but yeah, how it appears on the outside of being the supportive family, people don't see what's going on behind closed doors a lot of times because they don't want to. When the whole interior of the house is changing, it's like rearranging the furniture, but you're rearranging the people and aren't going to be moving them again.
Yeah, exactly. Two examples of primary and secondary losses that I use for people. One would be, and we were blessed that my husband had benefits, so his wages continued to come in. Many families that I work with, that's not the case. The person with the brain injury is not able to go back to work. They're the main breadwinner, so lifestyle changes are huge for the family. So that's the primary loss, that person is going to work through their inability to return to work. So secondary loss for that person is reduced income, if they have any income. Sometimes people don't have those benefits. And in Canada, in British Columbia, they would go on what we call people with disability, so PWD, and it's less than $1,000 a month, so not enough.
Like our Social Security then, kind of?
Yeah, it just isn't enough. So then from that primary and secondary loss for that person, the secondary loss is spinning off for the family, or then the wife, maybe she can't return to work, and I ended up quitting my job and stayed home to look after my husband. So in that sense, our income was greatly reduced because I couldn't work. I had to be home with him 24/7. So that was my loss, right? I lost my work, too, and my passion of what I was doing. And again, further lifestyle changes because I wasn't working. So then for the children, and on top of, you know, dad is not the same. He can't function the same. He's not helping you with homework. He can't take you for a walk in the creek bed to look for fish anymore, and he's not playing games. But they also had to, go through this massive lifestyle change. We weren't going out for dinner. We weren't planning vacations. We weren't doing the things that we would normally do. We were watching our pennies and making do with what we had. So
all those things that encompassed your identities individually and as a family were being challenged.
Yeah, and that is still true today for people. And that, the next article I have coming out with Lash & Associate is called The Onion Effect. And it's about the layers of loss, because it isn't, loss is not this one-dimensional thing, that it's just a loss. You got a loss,
right.
That's it,
right.
Up and move on. There's layers, and people that is kind of the magic of the work that I have a passion to do with people, is to help them unravel those layers, because until they get in there and really look at those layers and work with it, they cannot move beyond it. And it's so, so important that they do if they really are going to grieve and mourn the loss, heal, and move on. And you can think of it as a crop of dandelions. And I say to people, if you imagine that your yard is filled with dandelions and you go out there and cut the grass with the best lawnmower you've got, you can knock all those heads off. But I guarantee by the time you're putting that baby away, a new one has popped up in the lawn. Right? And
yeah,
it's because you didn't get to the root of it.
Right.
You only touched the surface.
That's
so
right,
that,
a Band-Aid.
So the work I like to do with people is, you know, digging in deep and kind of unraveling that. And there's a fine art of how that's done, because you can't rush people in to do this work either. There's, you know, lots of things that have to happen to lead up to the rebuilding. You know, there's this numbness and it's the shock and it's all of those things that you go through, that how could this happen to him, to me, to us, why now? I mean, all of those things have to be worked through, and they have to be given the opportunity to do that before they can really do the work of rebuilding their life. So Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was my hero, and I first came upon her work when I was pregnant with my second daughter and my brother-in-law was murdered, and my husband's parents were deceased, so we were the next of kin. And I was 23 years old and trying to deal with this murder and deal with my husband's emotions and trying to understand how this could happen, and somebody put me onto her work, and she really made sense for me. Where my studying has led me to, and God bless her for the work that she did, because she really took water to the parched. Because at the time that she came out with the five stages of grief, social workers didn't have anything to talk to families about when somebody was terminally ill. They didn't know how to get those conversations going. So she pioneered that for all of us to do that. I've gone on to study with Dr. Alan Wolfelt out of Fort Collins, Colorado, and it's the Center for Loss and Life Transition. And he doesn't call them stages of grief. It's potential responses to grief. And it's much more massive than what
Right.
Elizabeth had. And
yeah, she kept it simple.
kept it simple. But she herself also said before her death that it was taken out of context. She did not mean for people to interpret it that it was stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and if you didn't do step 2, you better go back to step 1, and if you jump to step 5, you're not doing it right. And she didn't mean
right.
for that. She meant it to be what Alan's work is too, that these are potential responses. So you may feel all of them, you may feel
right.
some of them and jump around for them. So my study.
So they're pivotal. You can really cycle through the stages in different order. You can go back and revisit, you know, maybe go through 1, 2, get stuck in 3, revisit. So it really has to do with an individual's process
and the tools,
support, or capability they have to move through those stages.
And life events, and this is very true for children, life events, as life continues to unfold for them, and there are new experiences, they will go back to revisit that loss. So if there's a death, like when my husband died, you know, we came to accept that and learn the hard way that it's not just that first year that is so difficult, the first birthday, first Christmas, first Father's Day. It's every day that unfolds for them, and there's a new life event that he's not part of. He's not here. So when they graduated, when they got married, when they gave birth to their children, Dad is not there. I mean, they have a wonderful stepfather. They have a great relationship with him. And, you know, we don't take anything away from that. But for sure, they still have to revisit their loss when these things happen. So that's true for us, too. As life unfolds and we have new experiences, we are going to go back and revisit those losses. The difference that people will know when they have healed is you're able to tell the story without there being significant pain. And that takes a long time to do. It's hard work. I don't, you know, want to scare people off, but it is hard work, and you're not meant to do this alone. You're not meant
no.
to do it. None of us
no,
are.
No, no, no. In fact, I say in my standing program notes, let me find this here real quick, because it has to do with what you just said, and I believe that to be true myself with all my heart, but I say this show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. I say this is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. And I focus on, in all these programs, the four A's, I call them, and the four A's of recovery, and that's awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. And I think, you know, that's what you're talking about. It's the same with those things. You know, it's not like we do it once or, you know, say go into a 12-step program and 12 weeks later we have the expectation of being totally transformed. Loss really works on, I don't know if you want to call it God's time, certainly not my time. I hate pain, and I hate those life losses, and they're hard. You know, they're really hard to deal with, and I've also been through those layers that you're talking about, and you're right. It brings you to your knees, but you really have to be able to process through those stages, and you can't do it alone because you will talk yourself out of it. Right. You know, you'll talk yourself out of it and probably not be consistent. So it's good to have someone involved as you're going through it, whether it's a sponsor, a spiritual advisor, a trusted third party, maybe without a vested interest, you know, right. in it, and go through, you know, work through that. Those stages. So that's great that we recognize that we're not on a timetable. You know, the old Italian, since you say that, and I didn't mean to butcher your last name, I'm half Italian and half Irish, and I have this great aunt who's since gone, but she had the worst, all right off the boat from Italy, and she had the worst abusive husband, but they had this custom in Italy that the wives wore black for a year. She did the whole thing, you know, threw herself over the coffin crying and weeping for this person, you know, who hadn't been such a great guy. But, you know, then they were writing down in your nationality or your religion or some other outside source of how long it's supposed to take you to work through a grief process. And I think even fellow family members or friends or families go through that same thing. They have an expectation that everybody's going to process at the same rate that they do.
Right. Well, and here's the thing about loss. Number one, it pays no heed to social status, to the money that you have in the bank, to sex, religion, color of your skin. It does not care. Loss is going to happen to everyone, right? Mm. So for me, the real tragedy in life is that I can't stop people from experiencing loss. I can't do that. I don't have the magic wand for that. You know, that's part of life. What I can do is promote this, what I call heart work, because it's, you've got to get out of your head when you're grieving in the morning and get into your heart and feel it and work with it. We can promote people to do that, and we keep this conversation going, and we start talking about it in our homes, and it doesn't have to be the doom and gloom. It's about giving people a toolbox, because I, you know, my children had to be given that toolbox in a very hard, abrupt way. But they have that toolbox, and they've carried it with them, and they've had to use what we used to get through additional losses since then, when their grandmother died, and my one daughter has lost a set of twins and a single birth before that, and so lots of different losses, and I can't stop people from experiencing that, but all I can do is be there and walk with them for however long it takes, for however long they need the support, right? So it is heart work, and people need to get out of their head. So that's part of it. The other part is there is this natural tendency for society to rush people through loss, just what you said, and that we expect people to, you know, be through this. Like, come on, it's been 6 months, like you should be better. And you know what, there's some guide posts there that we watch for as counselors, if their grief isn't beginning to lighten a bit and they're not, you know, engaging in life, or they're not taking care of themselves in the very basic way of getting nutrition and getting out of bed. And then there's some other interventions that have to happen there. But this is not something that heals in 6 months, and sometimes it's not even 2 years. It's been 23 years for me, and I still can have some things come up in my life, experiences that are happy or sad, and they bring forward some of those memories and things that I have to deal with. Now, sometimes when that happens and it's really painful, I know that what's sitting there is unresolved grief, and I have to kind of work through that. But it doesn't mean that this is ever going to go away. And, you know, we need to talk about loss as part of life and educate people on what to do, just as we do, like, you know, part of life is getting a job and driving a car, and these are the things that you have to learn about, and this is what you need to do if you get into trouble at school or whatever. You know, we need to give people the tools to do this, because loss is part of life, and that is how we grow. That's how we learn. That's how we gain gifts. That's how we come to help other people. That's how I have become who I am. I would not be the person I am today if I had not been through these losses. Not that I want to repeat that.
No.
Anybody, but I truly feel blessed on some level that, wow, I have learned a lot about living, loving, dying, and giving to others and walking with them. And I could not have learned that from a book.
Right. No, you're very right, and I understand what you're talking about. It is, I felt that way when I had a near-death experience. I didn't talk about it because it was taboo, like, you know, abuse in the family or addiction in the family or any other pathology that the family, you know, of origin wants to keep secret. It's a pretty basic thing in the recovery realm, but just not keeping that secret and not talking about it.
Yes, we have to talk about it. And we have to talk about it and give people safe environments to do that work and do the talking, and it's very important. And I say to people, okay, not everybody needs counseling, right? Not everybody does, and there's been people who have been in counseling for the better part of their life and they really don't need it. There's other people who've never taken a day of counseling and they really could benefit from it. But, you know, in general, it can be a personal choice. It can be a medical need that's recommended that you do that. I am a big supporter of counseling, and the reason that I am, I say to people, if you think about your normal routine, and for me, I in the morning have my coffee in the same spot, same area of the room,
<Me too. laughs>
in the same direction, right? But and so I get the same view all the time. But if the next day I were to sit in a different chair and get a different view out the window and different view of the room, I see cobwebs that I didn't know were there. I may see something that, oh, I didn't even know where that was, right? It's all about a different view and changing our
perspective.
So if you go counseling, that is the safe environment for you to be able to explore what you're feeling with someone who is not immersed in your pain. And it's very tricky for families. They can't really be your supporter in that way because they have their own pain that they have to work through too, right?
Yes.
So, or if they haven't worked through all their pain, I mean, everybody, I think, will identify with when somebody says, you know what, this happened to me and I feel horrible, and before they could really work through what it was they were feeling, the person that was listening to them said, oh, but let me tell you what happened to me. That sounds just like what I went through. Right?
Yep.
And that just dismisses their pain. So to go into a safe environment where you can say how you feel, and I desperately needed somebody to talk to say, I don't feel like his wife anymore, and we don't have that connection anymore, and it scares me, and I don't know what's going to happen. I needed somebody to say that to and talk to without him there, because that would offend him and deeply hurt him to know that that's how I was feeling. The only way
but your feelings needed to be validated nonetheless.
Right?
Your feelings were your feelings. You're a separate unit. You're right. It would have done damage to him to hear that, but it doesn't delegitimize what you were feeling.
Right. And the only way I could work through those feelings, if I had have had the opportunity to talk with somebody that could help me explore that and come through the other side of it. And that, this is the ugly part about grief, is that there is no way around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You can't sidestep it. You can't hide behind it. The only way to the other side is through it. You have to go through it to heal and get to the other side. And if you don't, and this is where we see all kinds of problems arising for people, if you don't go through that and work through that pain and heal, then you have all kinds. I mean, every one of us can tell you somebody who's miserable, cynical, you don't want to be around them, they're nasty, and they don't even know what caused the pain initially, but they haven't worked through it. Or people take on substance like alcohol, drugs, to try and numb that pain because they just can't deal with it the way it is. Or there's lots of documentation about people developing diseases because they have just harbored all of this stuff in their body. So grief has to be part of the holistic approach to life. Like, you need to look at it, how it's affecting you physically, spiritually, socially, and emotionally. In all of those areas, you're going to have special needs, and every one of us needs the opportunity to work through the feelings associated in those areas to get through to the other side.
Right.
The only way.
As far as the family goes, do you think there's such a thing as, you know, before you knew your husband was going to die, or in the case of a lung disease, a degenerative disease, as you're watching that person slip away and it's not abrupt like it is, you know, sometimes with TBI or an acquired brain injury, it's something drawn out for a period of time. Do you think from your perspective as a wife or a relative or the child of, do you believe that any part of the grief process begins while people are alive, whether it's in that example I just gave you or perhaps the loss of a loved one in a significant other or marriage-type relationship that is broken up?
Yeah, certainly. My mom died of lung cancer, and my sisters and I moved home to be with her. She was sick for about 6 months and 3 weeks very acutely when they finally diagnosed it and before she died. But the grieving for us began as soon as we had that news, as soon as we suspected something was going on. And so, again, it's about getting people to some avenue where they can get the information, because it is grief and mourning, loss. I tell you, it is the roller coaster ride from hell. And so we need to be there to catch these people and say what you think is happening in your life, what you feel is happening in your life really is. This is what you're experiencing, and it's normal for you. It doesn't mean you're not doing it wrong and you're not going crazy. What you see happening is happening. So, yes, the grief process really does start in advance for people. And then this is where Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work made such great headway, was, you know, the hospices, being able to get people to have those conversations, encouraging families and the person who's dying to do a life review and, you know, and I'm really big on rituals with people too. One of the things we did when my mom was dying, when people came to see her, they wanted to say something. They were afraid to upset her. She didn't know what to say to them. So we started what I called the farewell journal. And most people were a little taken back. But I said, you know, this is her journal. You're welcome to leave a message in here for her. You can talk about anything that you want. And we have committed to our mom that nobody will read this but her if she chooses to. And when she dies, this journal will be buried with her. And for me, it was a way just to facilitate the feelings in the room, that people could give expression to it without this fear of upsetting her, but they wanted to say what they wanted to say. What I didn't realize that the added bonus was for my mom that she did read some of those pages, and she was brought to tears because she didn't know she'd meant so much to people, or she didn't realize that some little thing that she thought was inconsequential was so significant and life-changing for them. So it really helped her to see how people loved her and appreciated her. And, you know, we went from this tiny little book to something that was like 3 inches thick with stuff that was stuffed in there from people. And we did bury it with her. But that was just a ritual that we did. I've talked to people about, you know, that empty, heavy silence in a room when someone's dying and everybody's standing around the bed. Well,
right.
You know, one of the things I've recommended is get a plant or a silk tree or something and cut out some paper hearts and have pens there and have people write their favorite memory with that person. And so when you're standing there and it's like you don't know what to say, it's like, oh, tell me about that story that you and Tommy going fishing and his first experience. What was that about? Right? It doesn't always have to be about the sad stuff, but that helps the person do a life review. That helps you to connect with them on a different level. Helps everybody to remember the good times, right? And it's a way to get the conversations going.
Yeah, I really like that. I really like that a lot. That's a great idea because you're exactly right. Now things, and I hadn't experienced much death close up. I'll be in a position of having that in my future. I've got a 93-year-old Nana that I'm very close to who, well, number one, she's 93. Number two, they found a number of clots, blood clots in her leg, and they may or may not, you know, break loose. Medication may help them, but she is that age. You know, my father contracted Parkinson's disease, which will, his mother had it, my grandma had it, my other grandma, and so to watch, and I've had friends that have gone quickly, too quickly, but some of those rituals on those friends recently, one I write about in my book, and then one that I've told on here before, because recently a friend of mine passed, a woman named Marty, and she was a very spunky older woman, and it was so sudden. She had kind of blurry vision one day, went to the eye doctor, never did get to go home, went straight to the hospital, and from there to a hospice. She had a brain tumor. And a couple of gals and I that know her from a social club went up, and, you know, you're right, that tension, you know, everybody just kind of standing there not knowing what to do. And we had brought, Sally had brought, actually, I'll give her credit where due, had brought a scented oil. And Marty, you know, someone had sent her roses, and I wasn't sure if she could smell them. I took off some of the petals and put them between her fingers and rubbed her fingers close to her nose because that smell, you know, would come. And that rubbing of the oil on her, just the physical contact and the feeling of connectedness, when you know you're looking at a half circle and the bottom of that circle is the person that's going to cross over, and the sides of those circle are those people you're talking about that are standing with them, then the top part of the circle, as I see it, is the people that are going to be receiving them, which will be familiar spirits, and then they'll cross over into the realm of the souls and leave their body behind. And so, you know, not only does the survivor have to face their mortality, and at a premature age, when you were talking about those ages, I was 35 when my brain aneurysm ruptured, and I was at the peak of my game almost in every way, shape, and form, like you were talking, you know, physically, professionally. I had a really good life, and then, boom, in a day that changed. You know, and that was really hard to let go of, that old life. And without any support around or any we, like you're talking about, And I will say now that I concur with you that therapy is a very important thing, because you're going to have the feelings and you're either going to take them out on the wrong people or the ones you love, like you said, that are already going through their own stuff, or you're going to pay someone to dump your emotional trash on, and for some reason they thought that was a good way to make a living, and they're getting paid for it, you know, to be that third party, that person who's not attached, where you can just go and unload emotionally, because if you don't, the toxicity, I think, does accumulate and cause disease, like you were referring to. I believe that completely and totally, and I think I did that to myself in firing off some arthritic conditions, and I'm very lucky it hasn't been more serious, but I look at those as red flags. Since I saw the big red flag right in the front of the road in early age, I'm kind of aware, you know what I mean, about the messages that are placed in front of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And one of the things I was going to say is that for all of us who are supporting people, whether you're a counselor, you're a family friend, a good buddy, and you want to show support, one of the things to try and kind of wrap your head around is that we want people to move forward in life, and yet you would never ask anybody to get from one side of the lake to the other without building a bridge or giving them a boat or, you know, some way to do that, right? So Alan Wolfeld, who I studied with, his teachings are really, and from a death perspective, and I have applied this to survivors of brain injury and family members of helping them to move forward, is he said people need to have the opportunity to say hello, goodbye, hello. So they need to say hello to who they were before this transformation in their life. They need to say goodbye to that person, just like you said, to be able to let go and work through that. And then they need to be able to say hello to who they are. So that is individually and collectively as a family unit, and, you know, as a community, people need to do that. So that's what I strive to do, is that's the bridge to give people to heal, is hello to who you were, goodbye to that person, and hello to who you are, and looking at the gifts that are coming forward with you and rebuilding on that. And we've seen just tremendous things with survivors and family members, but it no doubt is the most difficult journey that there is. It, you know, death is one thing, and that can last, and I have, you know, been through a murder in our family, and I've worked with another family that have had a recent murder, and, you know, moving forward, and there's all kinds of elements to every circumstance that makes it unique to that person, and I, no matter what I've learned and no matter what I've been through, people have experiences that still take my breath away, and I think, oh my gosh, I don't know how you're getting through that. But they do, and they do it when they have the opportunity to have a bridge built for them to do this work. So it's incredibly hard, and I applaud every survivor and family member who are on this path of recovery, and I have seen the tremendous things that people can do 4, 5, 6 years down the road, and families come back together, and families stay married and work through it, and all of those things that, you know, the first thing they told me was, you know, 85% of marriages end in divorce after brain injury. And I didn't even have them home from the hospital. And I was like, okay, you're telling me this now, why? Like, should I just pack up and go? I mean,
yeah.
What we need to say is that, you know, we need to say to people, you know what, 85% of marriages can stay together when families are given the supports and services that they need for however long that they need them. That's what we should be saying, right? It's possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I was really happy to see you had written your books. I made a comment on another show the other night. We were doing it on, you know, on relationships. And, I, they're not easy under the best circumstances. So when there's a challenge to them, that statistical probability of failure can really be there unless you're made aware that that's one of the pitfalls of the game, so it doesn't come up and surprise you. You know, the thing that I was disappointed in when I was released looking normal, quote unquote, is that there was no mention to me that there might be problems with short-term memory, with esteem and confidence issues, at not being able to process at the same process rate that I could do before, and not be able to do some things I took for granted that I could do before. And, you know, without that help and support you're talking about, part of the reason I believe in Brain Injury Radio and people writing books like what you're doing is I went 17 years without having met another survivor. And so I got to have a lot of years within an enabling family to keep myself in denial and to let doctors tell me it was primarily psychological, and not validate the fact that I knew that my brain exploding bleeding at will through itself and being in a coma for 11 years and having my bean cracked, that even the best surgeon wasn't putting Humpty back together quite like God put it out in the first place, you know what I mean? But nobody would validate that. And so not only do you not get an instruction book, you know, of what you can expect and the resources out there that can help you get through a very real process, but in too few of the cases, they don't even acknowledge there's a process for you to get through. Until 10 months ago when I started hosting here, I didn't know that. I thought you got dismissed, you looked normal, you were patted on the rump and sent out into the universe, and then got relegated to the shrink boneyard. You know, I didn't know that there was people out there who would recite back to me, mirror back to me, the exact processing or lack thereof and symptomology that I had and have. And when you talk about the grief process, those pivotal five that you kind of move in and out of them. And I know that there's a few people out there listening tonight in a TBI community that have had, I think they lost two of theirs over the weekend. And one person was young. I don't know the details on the other one, but in the case of a healthy support group where there's a mutual respect among those people and a desire to help others, I think they can go through the same kind of group trauma as a family does in many ways, don't you? They're out there listening tonight and all grieving these sudden recent losses, and perhaps listening to the program, and they're all people with TBIs, a lot of the people, those people that are listening, or caregivers, and have suffered recent loss, stacked loss, the way that you did.
And, you know, the thing is that people, the friendships, the bonding that develops, and people sharing their stories, and they identify with each other, and they understand one another, and they become great supports. That's their lifeline, you know. And then when somebody is taken, you know, one link comes out of the chain link fence again, it's another loss. And so, you know, it takes people back to that place, and they may not really even understand sort of what those layers are that are coming up for them, but it's the reality that they have yet experienced another loss and may not have resolved past losses adequately enough that those aren't snowballing with them. So it's a bit of an art. Part of what, you know, and this is how I do my work, and I have always done it, and I encourage people, is when you're seeking help, the first thing you want to do is see if that person, what their attitude toward you is. So I always approach people with, yes, I am an expert in grief and loss. I know a lot about it, and I write about it, but I only know what I know. I don't know everything, and I'll never know everything, and you'll know things that I don't know, so I need you to teach me how this has impacted you. I need you to teach me how this has changed your life. and changed your dreams and changed your feelings. I need you to teach me all of that, and then I can walk with you through the pain. Right? So I'm not going to come into anybody with this cookie-cutter approach as, oh, yeah, you've had a loss. This is what you do, and this is the next step, and the next step, and the next step, and then you're all better. It is about teach me how this has impacted you, because every one of us experiences it differently. Our relationships with that person, so in that group setting, some of the relationships are maybe stronger, you know, deeper bonds, and then others, but they all can appear to be grieving the same way. And this could be a place where a group facilitator, for example, may want to be very, you know, keep their eyes and ears open to see the changes, because one of the things that can happen is what we call the family pressure cooker, and it can be applied to any group. But when you're all experiencing a loss and you all have that individual relationship, so these are going to those primary, secondary losses that I spoke about and how it impacts every person, what builds is this tension is that everybody, and this is Alan Wolfelt's teaching again that I really adhere to, is that there is this high need to be understood of where you're coming from in this loss, and the need for you to be understood is so great, you have little capacity to understand where another person may be coming from. So we can see conflicts, and sometimes there's these major blow-ups in families around funerals or things like that, and that's all that's happened, is that people are struggling with their own loss, and they really need to be understood, so much so that they can't take in what everybody else is experiencing as well. So that's
right.
One of the things that we can do to help people is to say, you know what, this happens, and you all have a need, and you all are experiencing this in a different way, but it doesn't mean that your experience of this loss is worse or more important than mine. It's different, and, you know, helping people to honor that can mitigate that tension that builds before there's a huge blow-up.
Right. I think that's a very good suggestion, too. Yeah, that's a very good suggestion, too. The group will process, but I think you have an you can probably have an expectation that you have to be a little more mindful at that time, like you say, because people are going to process differently. Some people demonstrate their fear or sorrow by exhibiting anger, for example, and you know, different manifestations of feelings, because, you know, it doesn't take self-medicating, although that's certainly an option, but it doesn't take that to bury your feelings or tamp down your feelings. Some of it is just to never let them see you sweat mentality that, you know, some people grew up in. There can be a lot of different reasons for that, but yeah, those feelings can be, our mind is an amazing thing that can web a cocoon of denial around us.
Yeah. Well, and we can deny what's happening, and we do feel angry, and we may feel angry at a different time than somebody else, but I experienced anger as well when all of these happened, and hopelessness and frustration and sadness and desperation to change it, and, you know, just anybody to wake me up from that bad dream, you know, but it's how you get to work through it. So anger is very normal, and, you know, why wouldn't you be angry when this happened? Like, you at the top of your game, and, you know, that's not what you planned for your life, and that's not what I planned for my life. My husband and I have been married 14 years, and we were working hard, and we both had jobs, and I was studying, we were raising our children, we were community-minded, we volunteered, we paid our taxes, you know, we did everything that we were supposed to do to be good people. So, yeah,
right.
Like, why would I not be angry that was not in my plan, right? So,
right.
But what do I do with that anger, right? If I don't find a safe, appropriate way to express that, you know, punching a hole in the wall is going to get me in trouble. Punching somebody
right.
in the nose is going to get me in trouble.
Yes.
You know, and abandoning my children is going to get me in trouble. Like, I have to find the right way to express that anger and to let it go. Right? Because the biggest thing about anger, and I, again, when my husband died, I did feel some anger about that woman that hit him because it was senseless. I was angry at the doctors that prescribed two drugs that interacted on my brother. They should have known better. You know,
yes.
I was angry. But on the other hand, it was like I had to come to forgive. And forgiving people is not about letting them off the hook. It's about holding them accountable for what they did, but it's about releasing the poison that you're carrying so you can go on to have a whole life too, right? So, and not inviting that experience back into your life, so not putting yourself in those same situations. But the anger is
yes.
real, it's normal, and you
mm-hmm.
have to work through, you have to work through
right.
it.
Right. I think that's very important. I've seen more than one person live to be old and bitter and alone from not being able to work through that process, or people commit suicide, you know, because they can't make it through that process, you know,
right.
whether it's ignorance or false pride or ego, a lot of different drivers behind the things that people do, you know.
Well, and then this is also where a good counselor can be effective, is because what I do with people in our early conversation is talking about family of origin. So how did your family cope with loss? How did your family deal with trauma? How did your family discuss pain and suffering? You know, do you come from this British background where it's like stiff upper lip and keep going, or another ethnic culture which would be you just work hard and work harder when it gets hurtful, like just
right.
keep going, sit down and keep
yep.
working. So that's a generational thing, right? So my
yes.
parents coped the way they did because they learned it from their parents. Their parents learned it from their parents. So the good, I mean, that's the bad news, is that they're handing that down that way
yes.
to do it, the old way. The good news is that we all get to make new choices. We're adults, and there's education, and there's people out there that can help us, and we get to break that chain. We don't have to have it that way. We can find a new way to process our grief and do it right. So it is important for people to look at their family of origin, like, because you are carrying those responses with you. You don't even understand that, huh? Like, you know, yeah, like, no, that's not who I am. That's not true for me. That's not how I want to respond to things. That's the only way I've ever seen it done. So that crazy making comes in, like, okay, I don't feel the way my mom and dad did when they had a loss. Am I crazy? Am I a bad person? Am I doing this wrong? No, you're not. Your heart is coming out, and your gut instinct is, this isn't right. You need to do it a different way. And that's my job, is to help you see that that's a good thing. Do it a different way.
Do you think that losses in your past that you didn't fully deal with can be triggered by some similarity in a more recent loss, maybe with a person not even as close to you, but there's something about them or the circumstance around it or some trigger that takes you back to a more personal loss you had in your life, and your reaction is amplified to this most recent loss because
yeah,
you're carrying the former grief with you.
Right, and people don't always understand what's happening to them when that occurs, but it's that old snowball effect, right? It'll just
right.
keep rolling along and building and building, and that's what I'm saying, that sometimes people years down the road and they're so bitter and miserable, and they don't even know why, you know, they're that way. Another example is I lost my brother, and I was devastated. He was the eldest of seven kids. I'm the middle child. He named me after his kindergarten teacher. Like, we had a really special bond. And I really struggled with his death. The next year when my husband died, and I tell people, and this is not to diminish the love for my husband, I took my husband's death a lot better than I took my brother's death. But part of that was I saw how poorly I allowed myself to grieve with my brother because I kept dismissing my pain, saying, I'm just the little sister. He has a mom, his wife, three beautiful children that were all suffering this tremendous loss too. So I would push that away. But then when it was
okay.
children, I like, okay, now I'm really stuck here. I'm the one responsible for these kids, so I need to do this differently. So I was very proactive with my grief after my husband died, and that made it easier for me to cope with. So what you're talking about is like somebody could have, say, a death in the family, and they're working through that. They think that they've kind of pulled it together and they're moving on with life. And 6 months or a year down the road, there's another loss that either someone else has experienced or it's a loss they've experienced, and it's minor, really, compared to what they've been through, but their response is so much greater or as, you know, horrible as it was when they had that loss of a loved one. And
right.
They don't know why. And that's because that unresolved grief bubbles to the surface. It's just like I said about the dandelion crop. If you don't get to the root of it, it's never going to go away. It will always rear its ugly head and grab you by the throat whenever it can until you resolve the grief.
Agreed.
That's why should be talking about this with children. We should, and I was part of a program, and you have it in the States, Rainbows International, which is a bereavement program for children, and it was about talking about death, divorce, separation, children who are actually going through loss. And we did it up here in Canada for families with brain injury, you know, when the parent has a brain injury, and looking at those losses, because it's a toolbox for them, and it's the reality of saying this is life, and yeah, this is the part about life that we're not excited about. We don't want to see people hurt. We don't want to see people's hearts broken. But the truth is, that's what happens in life. And so how can we help you to get through that? Because we all will go through this in some way, whether it's personally, it's a friend, somebody we're supporting. We all will be touched by loss. I mean, we can see it globally now, where people who didn't know the people in Sandy Hook Elementary, who were devastated by what happened and feel the pain of those family losing their children. I'll probably never meet them, but I was a blubbering idiot too, because I just, we're so global, we're so internet connected, information comes to us from all over the world. You know, we're not in these little communities on 10 acres of land, farming it, and never see our neighbors. We hear about loss, so it's even more important that we educate people on how to cope with it.
I agree totally. Some pretty nasty things happen in the midst of grief, and you were talking about losses. Before I go on, though, I do want to make an announcement for anyone who would like to call in and would have any questions or comments for Janelle. I'm going to give you the number. It's 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. I'll be able to start taking your calls anytime. We'll go on talking, but as I see any hands go up, you need to press 1 when you call in. Then I will entertain your questions. But in any case, so when is your new book coming out?
Well, I'm currently, people can go to my website and they can email me at Janelle Life Losses, and I'll certainly keep them posted on that. But I'm just having my website redesigned, but the one is still active that's there. And sort of the launch, I'm working on that, when the launch is going to be for the new website and the ebook. And I've decided to put it out as an ebook because I have so many people wanting the book that I can't really wait for the traditional publishing for that to happen. So I'll get it out in an ebook, and then people can at least start having that, and if it gets traditionally published by a publisher, that's great too. So I will keep people informed. It'll be on my website, but you can certainly contact me, and people can just email me. I'm happy to. I can't always respond right away, but I do respond to my emails. I'm happy to do that and answer questions or help them work on something or refer them to somebody.
Yeah, I'll attest to that. Well, I did put the names of your books in earlier, and also the website, as well as Lash's website, and just now I repeated yourlifelosses.com in the chat room, so the folks in the chat have been kept abreast of your books. That's why I was asking about. Okay, so we'll just put Life Losses in our favorites and check back then, right? But
okay,
in the meantime, we can check that first book out for sure. I really am glad that you're doing what you're doing, because, like you said, loss is a part of life, and it's difficult. It doesn't come with an instruction book, and everybody does it different. And like you said, you used a good example. I mean, take family members when there's more than one kid and a parent dies, and all of them you've seen at each other's throats, you know, over the insignificant relics in the house. I mean, significant in that they're sentimental, but not things that, is this the hill you want to die on kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Because emotions are just running.
Yeah, running high, and people just take a step back, breathe, and come back to it later. But one of the things that, and I know it is not only me, it's why you do what you do. It's why other survivors or family members are involved in, like, the Brain Injury Association of the USA, which is a fantastic group, but all over to the state organizations. But we do it because we have survived. And I honestly do feel this is my calling. This is how I was meant to serve people, and I'm happy to do that. That's my spiritual belief. But I also feel very obligated that I have survived. I have a good life. I've worked through all of that. And I see that as what I need to do to extend a hand to people coming behind me, that we're all walking through this together. So when people are looking to give back in their community and to help others, this is how we can do it. You don't always have to be a counselor, just, you know, having a cup of coffee with a person or chit-chat over the back fence and giving them encouragement and hope. That can have tremendous impact on them and give them just what they need to hang on to. So never diminish what your part is. Where it's really important, all of that, is that you have to do your own work to be able to really help other people. You have to.
Yes.
I can't allow my pain to get in the way, right? So I have to continually do my work, and that's what helpers do.
Well, it's like the difference between getting something free and working to earn it. You're going to appreciate it and guard it more carefully if you've earned it than if it was given sometimes. Right. We do have a caller on the line, Janelle, and it looks like, if I'm correct, this is our Southern Gentleman and Tuesday night host, Les Paul. Might be Les Paul Morgan. Are you with us?
The best I can tell, it's me.
Oh, good. Hi, Les Paul. Janelle.
Nice
Hi.
To meet you, Janelle.
Nice to meet you.
I missed the very beginning. I apologize about that. And one thing I typed in the well, first of all, you're a wonderful guest, and I love hearing what you're talking about, because as survivors, we have all had many losses. And I work at a Center for Independent Living where we have two brain injury support groups, and I've met a lot of friends and lost a lot of friends that have died from brain injuries and all kinds of things. And the book, I noticed that the book A Change of Mind was listed in there. I've got that book in my office, and I share that book all the time with new survivors.
Thank you.
It's been a wonderful book, and I need to get some more of your books, because that book has probably been read by 100 people in my office. I'm not kidding. I use it to open up, get people to open up to that are new to brain injury. I'll say, have you ever thought of a change of mind after a brain injury, or that the way your mind processes? And like you're talking about grief and loss tonight, I come from what was a 7-member immediate family, which is down to just me and my brother now.
Yeah.
And so I've had a lot of loss in my family. It took a lot of heartache and struggles and trials and a lot of brain injury and a lot of brain operations, and yet I watched them all drop one by one, and I managed to outlive them. And it still blows my mind today that I'm still here, and my family's all gone. It's amazing. But being here on Brain Injury Radio, listening to someone like you, there's someone out there tonight that needs to hear what you're talking about. So I'm so thankful for the guest Kim has on you tonight. I forgot your name when I went to say it. That's why I said
Janelle.
Janelle.
Thank you. One of the things that part of my healing was just what you've experienced with, you know, saying, like, I don't know how I got to still be here and all my family is gone. Part of my healing was coming to learn, and I really believe this, that the endings are not ours to write. That I do believe that my husband, my brother, and my friend, they lived until they died. They lived right until they died. They were very young, but they were living until they died. They were doing what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the journey is that you and I don't get to choose when people will die, how old they will be, how they will die, or where we will be at on the path with them when they die and if we're ready to let them go. We don't get to choose that. All we get to choose is to survive, and that does become a choice of how, and I do feel for people because I've been there, and this is the work that I love to do, is the day that they wake up out of that fog and they're like, oh, crap, I did survive. Now how do I do that? Because, you know, there's a time, a part of me for a long time, I didn't want to kill myself, but I also knew that the only way to be with my husband was through death. And, you know, you're walking with one foot in this world and one in the other world. And then I remember that day when the fog lifted and I was like, oh, I did survive and I'm happy, but now how do I make sense out of this new life?
Wow, that's beautiful there. And I'm always telling people, I say it all the time, so people probably get sick of this. I say turn your negative into your positive, because we do feel negative after a brain injury about ourselves often. And I love how positive you are about it tonight. That's all I'm going to say for now, but I appreciate you coming on tonight. It's wonderful hearing you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for supporting my work.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Les Paul. I'm sorry, folks. I was getting a message from beyond. No, I'm not a psychic. Okay, never mind. I can't deal with that. We'll have to move on. So, in any case, Janelle, I just think it's wonderful the work that you're doing. And like you say, death is a part of life, but nobody gets a handbook on how they're supposed to deal with that. And I'm with you about recovery of any kind, that if we do it alone, we're doing it through our own perception, which is probably warped with our grief at the time. And so the way to stay honest is to have some accountability, I think, to a third party, you know, professional.
Right.
And I don't know, like you, I'm in full agreement on that. So I certainly appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to your new book coming out. But I also wanted to know about the other magazine. What was it called? The Head?
Headline magazine.
Yeah,
and
tell me about that.
It's a provincial magazine in BC, where I live, in British Columbia. And as I said, I've been working on it for about 12 years. The publisher is Mike Rossiter. He lives in Richmond, British Columbia. His son is an adult who has a brain injury and required significant support from his family. And Mike and I have been involved on the provincial board together and the provincial conference and all of that. And Headline was one of those little pieces that we did together, and we've just continued to do it on. Now, it does go across Canada. We do send it to people in the States. People can get a PDF sent to them by email, so they can just email me with information. I will get that to them. There's no charge for it as well. And it's very much like what Marilyn and Bob are attempting to do with the Brain Injury Journey magazine, is to give hope to people. It's to share stories and informational articles, and it's about getting this conversation going. And that is so important, because, I mean, if all of us could wave that magic wand, there would never be another brain injury in the world, ever, ever, ever. But the reality is that, you know, as medical interventions advance and we're able to save lives, and that's all a good thing, but we also then have to prepare to give people quality of life and services and supports that they need to rebuild their life and to live as whole and full and, you know, as richly as they can in the way that they want to. And so both of these magazines are getting that information out there. And certainly Lash & Associates have invested tremendous effort and time and blood, sweat, and tears into building their company as resource material for people and families and educators and supporters and helpers. So always go to their website. They have tremendous people blogging and great books and pieces that, you know, tip cards that people can get. So Meryl and Bob have really been a pioneer in getting information out there for people too. And that's how we get the story out, and that's how we give people hope, is by linking them with all of this information and with other people so that they can identify with it and they can reach out and have that hand extended to them. So both of the magazines are free. You should get them. Yeah, people should get them.
Yeah, and I did type those into the chat. And again, that's Headline Magazine out of Canada and The Journey Magazine from LA Publishing and Lash Publishing. Their website's lapublishing.com. But if you go to Janelle's site, which is lifelosses.com, that's life, there's a lot of S's in there, life, LOSSES.com, lifelosses.com, there'll be information as she updates her website, both on the release of her new book and other tidbits. So you've been doing a little writing for both of the magazines and writing two books, so you've just been a writing fool.
Yeah, and I love it. It's great. So it's very therapeutic for me as well, and I learn a lot from people as I do it. And, I feel, like I said, I feel very blessed to be doing the work that I'm doing, and there's a purpose to it. And as long as this is what I'm called to do, this is what I'll be doing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that I feel that way too about what I do right now, and you never know how long that was going to how long that's going to last or where that road's going to lead, because you didn't know you were going to be on that road maybe a year ago, you know. And all of a sudden you're there and you never know, but it's like more will be revealed, you know, as it unfolds, you know you just seem to know. So in any case, you've been really great. I told you it would be an hour to an hour and a half, and we are at the hour and a half point. So, Janelle, I want to thank you so much for being a guest tonight and sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And I'm sorry for the terrible losses that you had to go through to put you on the road that you're on. But I also, you know, believe in a divine hand in things, and believe that that's where you're supposed to be and that you're doing a really good job doing it, something very necessary that everybody has to face at some point. And nobody got instructions on maybe modeled behavior from prior generations, but not a way to personally express our grief and our losses. So keep up the great work, and I hope you'll come back and see us again.
I'd love to. Thank you so much, and God bless you and all your listeners, and I just want to encourage people to do the work of healing. It's really important. You deserve to do it because you have the rest of your life to live, and you deserve to do it and be happy and joyous and achieve all of your dreams. So God bless everybody.
Thank you.
God bless you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
You bet. That was Janelle. You can read about her in my program notes. She was a great guest. She certainly has a lot of both personal and then academic experience in the area of helping people with grief and loss, something that we all have. And I think now I have, let me see. Oh, a half an hour, yes, into the live show. So what I'm going to do, and I thought it was apropos after hearing her, and then feel free to call in and make your comments or observations about how grief has come down for you and how what you might have picked up out of Janelle's discussion. But one of my independent artists, I'm going to give you a break. We've done an hour and a half interview that I've been excited about lately is called Rescue, and he is out of Italy. So I decided to do this in tribute to Janelle, since I kind of butchered her Italian last name. Rescue is also in Italy. He's one of our new indie artists. The website, and I'll type that in a minute, is rescueofficial.com. And this song is called You're My Star. So we'll be back in about 4 minutes. Thanks. Again, that was Rescue with You Are My Star. And if you go to their website, which is, what did I say? I thought I typed it in. It's Rescue Official, OFFICIAL, rescueofficial.com, or even, yeah, that's the best place to go. Because also, if you go to YouTube and you type in Rescue Spark, S-P-A-R-K, I'll play that in a minute, Spark Out, you'll see two videos. You'll see the video that goes along with this song that we just heard, You Are My Star. You'll also see the video to Spark Out. And I know that YouTube will take you there if you just search Rescue Spark Out. And then it'll show you the other video. But one of the reasons why I really liked him when I heard him the first time, and I know Les Paul will appreciate this, but in his bio, it says, music is a therapy, rescue is a pill. Okay, well, maybe he wasn't as impressed as I was, or maybe Les Paul's fallen asleep, but...
Oh, I didn't... Am I on microphone?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it. I loved that. That's the only reason I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry,
well,
I apologize. I didn't...
No. No big deal. You were unmuted, but... because you had asked a question before, and I had unmuted you, and I didn't mute you again, but... Anyway, on his bio, music is a therapy, rescue is a pill. And that's kind of how I felt about a couple of these guys, this gentleman's songs. But in any case, like I say, he's from Italy. It's nice of him to put that music on. I sent some of you a link or posted it the other night that had the YouTube video on it, and it's just kind of awesome. And he seems to be a really nice guy, but... I knew I was in trouble when I made it to his Facebook page, and it was all in Italian. I was like, okay, it's going to be kind of difficult for me to do this on Facebook with him. But no, he understood and sends his best wishes out to our audience and is happy to be sharing his music with us. And so... I think what I'll do in that case then, let me see what time it is. It's a quarter till, so I tell you what I'm going to do. Keith Anthony, I believe, is on the line here. Are you not?
No, I'm not here at all. I'm definitely fading out, but it was great to hear that track. That's so much more positive than what went on earlier. And it's nice to get some positive input. So it's a fabulous track. Really enjoyed that. It was good.
Thanks. I think you'll like most of them that I play. And for those of you that we have about maybe, I don't know, Blog Talk Radio is not so good at time, but I'm just going to tell you we got maybe 12 minutes left in our live show. I will do some overtime, just burning off some steam, playing some music. If anyone wants to stay and chat, they're welcome. If not, and you just want to listen to music in the background, that's cool. If you want to shut it off, that's always an option. But if you do want to stay for overtime, which is recorded into the archive version, but you actually want to stay tonight and listen to music, you will need to call in to 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. And then you'll be able to stay with us for an undetermined amount of time. but we'll talk and listen to music. And what did I say? Yeah, okay, we've got that amount of time until the live show is over, and I would roll into overtime. We have a couple of minutes maybe we don't. I'm going to go. Yes.
If there's
please?
11 minutes.
We don't say undetermined. We say indeterminate in England. Queen's English.
You know, I think we say that here too. Indeterminate. Thank you. I needed
You're
that.
You're quite welcome.
All right, then. What I'm going to need is up to 4 minutes and 45 seconds when I close the show and roll into overtime. So if Les Paul says we have 11 minutes, then that means I can thank our sponsor.
I love the way you did that interview with your guest, Janelle Brice Biagioni, I believe.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Very, very professional. You are the consummate professional, and we could all learn a great deal from that, I think. I'm sure Les Paul would agree.
Yes.
Well, you know, when it comes to things like loss and grief, I've had a little, and I've been a lifer in trying to recover from it, and so I wasn't totally unfamiliar with what she was talking about. So, you know, I've been kind of preoccupied and letting some things of my own slip while I'm doing some other things and focusing in a wrong place. And I didn't remember at first about her tonight, and God works in mysterious ways in my life. I've got people coming. I've got a great guest next week that'll be coming on. The topic of that show is Wounded Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful author that's going to be on. And then that Michael C. Fionn, who was on a couple months ago with Silent Cries, is going to be back. His second book was just released, and he was a sweetie.
The first words I remember that I ever heard from anybody were the moment I was born, because the midwife said, "Good grief, get a bin liner." And life's gone downhill ever since.
Oh, no. It's a good thing before the banana jokes come out that we'll be getting to the end of the live show. But that is a good time filler, Anthony.
At least I made that one up. I didn't get that from Google.
9 minutes
and
remaining.
And it was just as funny. How many? 10 minutes remaining?
Nine.
Yes. That's one of the things Gary's been doing at work, is conjugating some German training things. He keeps coming home saying he's working on hair so-and-so, and it reminds me of Hogan's Heroes.
That's what I was thinking about when you said
that. For those of you old enough to remember Hogan's Heroes, I've been thinking that when my husband's talked to me recently about what's going on at his work, and he just... No, I'll save that. Anyway, I think what I'm going to do is tell you now that one of the first songs when I started looking for indie writers, in fact, it was even before that, I was looking for a trailer when my book first came out, and that's when I first became acquainted with this woman. She will come on our show sometime, she is not a survivor, but she's very sympathetic to what we do and what we deal with, and it became the trailer for my book and then kind of the trademark, I think, of my show, because what I always say when I'm getting ready to end the show is that it's something I believe that we all have. But what I will say to the live audience who will be dropping off now is thanks so much for being here at the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed your time with Janelle and I and Keith Anthony and Les on the board and the folks in the chat out in the audience. We appreciate your support of Brain Injury Radio Network. And I'm going to close the show in my usual way. And then for those staying, I'll be back for more informal chat and more music in 4 minutes and 45 seconds. This, again, is something I believe that we all have, and it's called Guardian Angel by Leah West. Check out her website, leahwest.com. Lots of great music. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
It's your time to leave, but don't.
again, that was Leah West. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask. A person should never try to do that late at night with a brain injury. But again, that was Leah West with Guardian Angel. I think I really have a couple more minutes before we cross into overtime. I muted. Let's see. Does it look like we have, what, 2 minutes left?
Oh, well, I'm not seeing it. Let me see. I've lost track of where the where it's at.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Let's see.
I looked away, and I always lose track of where that little clock is.
Well, you know what I can do? I'll tell you what I can do. This is pretty fun. Oh, we've got 90 seconds left, folks. So, so I will go back to maybe thanking our sponsors one more time in that 90 seconds. Actually, what I think I'll do is something that's kind of fun. I already told you all good night, and I hope you have a great week. But in tribute to our Tuesday host, Mr. Les Paul, I'm going to put on a song, Who's Sorry Now, by Les Paul Jones. Morgan? No. Oh, well, here you go. Officially brings us into overtime. That was for Les Paul, who I'll unmute here in just a moment. I bet that was a pleasant surprise to hear us be ushered out with his namesake. How you doing, Les Paul?
I feel like a millionaire, or at least a $100,000 bar, a hundred grand bar, candy bar.
Yeah. Well, I just happened to have enough time. And one thing about Les Paul is his song was a minute and 32 seconds. And so it was nice of him to make short songs, because when you don't have the 4 minutes and 45 seconds, Les Paul is a great one to ring out the main part of the show and move us over into overtime. And just to remind you that overtime is recorded and included in the archive on the on-demand section after we're off the air. And so, anyway, thank you guys for being on the show tonight. I appreciate you showing up, and I thought Janelle was, I don't know, did I say this already? Because it's been kind of funky, but when I opened up my page and saw who my guest was and went reading through my program notes, I thought, ain't that the somebody talking about grief and loss and you know, stuff like that, and you know, some of my friends know that those are some things that I've been wrestling with in one way or another a bit lately, and that's a hard process to go through. And so my God has a sense of humor, I guess, because I got a couple of different hosts on, but I opened up my page and I said, really, Janelle's tonight? Well, isn't that just something? Thank you very much. So I hope you got something out of her. I know, Les Paul, you've had a lot of loss, and she had rapid fire loss in her family. You also experienced the same in yours. And did you? You said you've got the book in your office, but
yes,
even hearing her speak, I'm sure you can relate to a lot of what she has to say. And I really thought that was a good idea she had about the writing. You know, writing something
yes.
down. I think that is a great idea. I also think a little bit of, now that a lot of people have smartphones and things, a little bit of footage, but at a time that they're willing and competent for it, not afterward, but maybe she enjoyed in that instance seeing things that other people impact she had made on other people's lives, and the video would be something like impact other people have made on her lives. You know what I mean? Kind of a celebration of life both ways. But it's really a hard topic because there's so many life situations that can elicit grief, and a lot, you know, you used to just think it was when someone died, you know, and then it expanded out to a, you know, marriages and divorces and more macro relationships, associations and things like that. And just such a myriad of things that, I mean, that's why it's more obvious here in the Midwest, but there are four seasons, you know, that things transition and change. The only thing we know for sure is that nothing is ever going to stay the same.
That's for sure. I was going to say, I worked with a lady named Peggy Ellis who passed on almost at the same time my mother did, maybe a few weeks apart. They were dear friends, and, you know, they both were in the hospital across the street from each other in Augusta. One was at University Hospital in Augusta, and one was at the, I'm forgetting if it was the VA hospital or what. And I was going and visiting them back and forth, and I'm saying, oh, my God, I've got to walk in there knowing they're both dying and very ill and go in with a smile. It was one of the hardest things I ever did. And it taught me a lot of lessons to be thankful for the time we have on Earth, for the people we know, and make as many friends as we can while we're here and help as many people as we can, because we'd never know when that person that we love and that one day we will grieve over is going to just be gone. I mean, don't forget to say good night to the people you love. Don't maybe kiss your mom or your husband or your wife or your girlfriend or whatever before you
someone
go.
Else's wife.
Your puppy.
Well, that too. What? Well, that too. Yeah, puppy for sure. You're a bandit.
You'd want to make sure to kiss your puppy goodbye.
That's
yeah.
right.
No, you're right. I think there's a general tendency in the population, especially when you're younger, to take life for granted and to be bulletproof. And then depending on what age, the harsh reality of life drops itself on your doorstep and you, you know, begin trying to learn how to deal with it when you don't even know what it is. You know, you've got to pick it up and roll it around in your hand a few times, really get a grip on exactly what it is you're dealing with here. All unfamiliar turf, you know, a lot of times built in sand without a clay foundation, you know.
That's right.
I think the work she's doing is really good, and that those things are helpful. I remember the first time I read Kubler-Ross and Steve, who was the guy who helped her at the end. It was, David Kessler kind of carried on her work after she was unable to do it herself, but she was the one who came up with the initial five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And that's kind of been the gold bar of grief therapy practitioners. since the beginning. And I'm sure they have other tools as well to build with those secondary things she was talking about, the secondary grief issues that come after the initial ones. There is therapy available in grief programs. There's grief support groups for those that are into support groups, but you really need to be able to find your voice. That's a great segue for another song. You've got to really be able to find your voice, and sometimes a support group is a support group, but sometimes, you know, you need to have it be a smaller deal where you're just free to be able to unleash without hurting anyone close to you or any material relationships, you know what I mean? And just kind of air it out. But who was I? You guys have to forgive me. I've been kind of rushed all day, I guess. But anyway, in that vein that I was talking about, you guys have seemed to really like this song, and it was something that has been in the mill, in the discussion, and something that we all struggle with from time to time, and that's To Find My Voice. This is by Daniel Christian.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration day. I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in. It's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice.
I just think that is a wonderful song by Daniel Christian. If you like, Keith Anthony brought up something very nice one night I thought was a really nice thing, and that's if any of you out there listening or on Facebook, if you go to facebook.com/Daniel, DanielChristianMusic. DanielChristianMusic.com, and you enjoy his music, tell him you heard it on Brain Injury Radio, and thanks for letting Kim use it, that you're all enjoying it. And I try to do that with all of our artists when I have it. They're all indie musicians, and being an indie author, I understand, as do they, I'm sure, the concept of starting artist at sometimes. But also the website, if you want to check it out, www.danielchristianmusic.com. So I'll bring the boys' mics back up, I think I'm trying to here, and see if they have anything to report or add as I'm scrolling down the music list tonight. Anything?
I'm here.
Anyone? Are
you
guys
you
just listening?
Great. I mean, Kim, what is it you need?
I don't need anything. I was just checking in to see if you guys left on the switchboard who are kind enough to hang out, if there was anything that you needed. Could I send around my girl with refreshments or...
I would like a milkshake, because he was talking about one a moment ago. Something.
Oh, that's right. You said milkshake.
I would like to have a burger, but I'm only eating rice, so I can't do the burger.
I have a cheeseburger in paradise, and let me see.
Oh, we do too. We've got those, that chain, you mean? You
yeah.
got that
oh,
chain?
I was thinking of the actual song, but I thought of him immediately when you said that.
I think of a
chain.
Hawaiian shirt when I think of him. I liked Come Monday. That was my favorite song. Some of those other ones were kind of good partying songs if you're down in the south of Florida or somewhere where you're doing things you ain't supposed to be. Which
Uh-oh.
I think he found himself in that situation a time or two, if I recall correctly. But fun guy, has some altruistic tendencies about causes, so that's good. And he's probably joined that. What was it I called it the other night? I said I call it all the time. Oh, the home show circuit.
Oh, yeah.
You think he's on the home show circuit yet? But I really like him. What's
he
his name? I can't think
him.
Of it.
I'm
what
trying to say it. And I'm Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah.
Ding, yeah,
ding,
I couldn't
ding,
say
ding,
Jimmy
ding.
Buffett first.
Yay! Thank you so much.
I don't know if
I
you know
to...
his song, Margaritaville. He opened up a restaurant based on that
yes.
song.
In fact, I saw that on a vacation to Florida is where I first saw that restaurant many years ago. So I did know that he had that, and we went and ate there. But, yeah, his songs were a lot of fun in the day. Mm-hmm.
I think he still tours to some degree, well, his own place more than anything. But I know I saw him sing not too long ago.
You did? Did he have on a Hawaiian print shirt?
Pretty much.
I'll have, speaking of touring, I'll have Winsome Benjamin in my local area very soon. I hope
cool.
I hope we can manage to meet up, that would be really nice, because I'd love
when
to take my
record. When is she coming, Anthony? Because I'll lobby on your behalf.
It'll be the 28th of July, 3 days' time, Sunday, in fact, she'll be here. And I really love to go to her concert and go backstage and interview her.
That would be fantastic.
I think she'll give me a hug. That would be nice, too.
No, nothing heavy, but I'll send her a Facebook. Because I see her on there all the time. I've said hi to her before and stuff.
Yes.
You know?
I can't say hi to her because she'll think I'm stalking her or chasing her because I'm a man. In spite of what was suggested earlier on, I am a man.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not in the Marines.
Right. Yeah. Right. Now, who said that? Was that in the Austin Powers?
I'm forgetting.
No, that was in the meeting earlier.
Yeah, I know, but I think Austin Powers, that father, you know, the bald
guy.
Baby. What was he? What was
all
his name?
All kinds of crazy voices. I can't think of it.
God darn it, you guys. Come on, you got it before. But the father, you know, the little bald father, the protagonist. Yeah, right?
Did you ever see A Fish Called Wanda?
Yeah, but
with
I can't
Jamie Lee
remember
Curtis.
It. Yeah, well, yeah, I know, I saw it.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember the movie, but I remember Jamie Lee Curtis was really sexy in that movie.
She was really sexy in some movie. I won't be able to remember the name of it, but it was with somebody unlikely, like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. They were like a man and wife.
I don't find him sexy.
Spy team.
Not my type.
Well, not him, but it was a good movie because she was in really good shape because they were both like superhero married detectives with each other. And, of course, he was muscular and she had been working
Jamie Lee
out.
Jamie Curtis
so.
Was in a movie with Schwarzenegger, was she?
Yeah, can you believe it? The things
you
some people
played,
do.
I would be back.
Yes. I would. I can't scroll fast enough.
I'll say yes, please.
Yeah. Well, when we get back, you know, toward the end, I'll scroll up to the sound effects section, and that's what I'll see the audience out with at the very, very end, is we'll give the audience applause for listening to our shows. We appreciate your listens, both live, of course, and in the archive. Sorry, there's a spaceship landing on my roof, and just ignore that sound and focus on my voice, as Keith Anthony would say.
The aliens are coming.
Yeah.
Get in a comfortable chair.
Jamie Lee Curtis was in a movie called True Lies, 1994, with Schwarzenegger.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. Thank
you. Was that long ago? Wow.
She looked pretty hot in that one, too, from what I can see.
That's what I was trying to tell you, yeah.
It made me feel old. I can't believe that's that old.
I'll have to make sure I listen to this movie.
Me too,
Paul.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. You'll really appreciate it. If you like that other one, you'll really appreciate
that. Make me want to see it now.
Well, you're just going to have to wait. But
well, I've got my Roku.
Favorite.
I'll hunt for it.
Hunt away. Hunt away. This is a song you guys really liked, a shorter one last week. This guy is really nice. He's here in the States, but he picked up a guitar at a very young age and went on to like all many different kinds and expressions of music. I'll give you his Facebook. Well, his Facebook, actually, like I said, folks, if you're on Facebook already and you want to say something to him, it's Facebook.com/ Kevin Harrison Music.
Okay.
Kevin Harrison Music. So K E V I N H A R R I S O N M U S I C. And if you like his song, same message, you know, these guys, we all, you know, we radio hosts, authors, people who do circuit,
you like to be acknowledged.
Presentations. Well, you like to know if you're making a difference.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah,
well, can
you like, it's not so much the glory, but you like to know that you're making a difference. So when you're thanking these musicians, it's just a nice thing. It's their heart and soul, and they're sharing it, and that's
it really is.
Bad to the bone, you know, bad to the bone. I like it.
Something I'd like to say.
Send me one of those notes while you're at it, will you? What'd you say, Les Paul?
Something I'd like to say about that is, you know, I've had some new musicians here lately, and you're exactly right, because they're saying, I had one of them call me and ask me, are you playing my music? Because I haven't had time to listen to the show lately, but it was great. When he said he did listen with his whole family one night, he said, man, how do you talk that long? You need more music.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
He said he loved the show, and so did his family. Kids, mom, dad, all about five people listened to the entire show all the way through. And so he sent me a couple more songs. And he said, this is how I look at it. He said, we love music, and we love giving to people that are, we know it's going to help. If our music's not going to help anybody, we don't want to give it to you. But if you just say the magic word that you really feel this music will help somebody, we'll send you some more. Do you feel like you need some more? I said, send me some more tunes. And that, you know, it's amazing that people have that kind of heart. And I'm thankful that you and Keith and some of us have found different musicians.
Me too, and you're right. I mean, they're the ones you find that are really kind about it are really awesome, awesome people, because they're sharing,
yeah.
You know, because they're willing. And I've been very blessed to have quite a few musicians
you
from
have.
Various genres coming together and being willing to say that to me. So that's really been a blessing for me, and I hope a good diverse amount of music for the audience as well. But anyway, I brought up Kevin Harrison's name, so now I'll play you a song so that you can make that determination. And
okay. This
is "See You Soon." "See You Soon" by Kevin Harrison.
Okay. Oh,
set in. But there ain't no use looking back, don't look back. Today is never fair, but it's all we'll ever have.
And that was Kevin Harrison, and that was called See You Soon. And if you didn't get the overtone to that, I'll dedicate to all those people out there, since we were talking about grief tonight on the show, and I know that Craig has suffered some losses in his circle of friends, a couple of them stacked one right after another. That song goes out to you and anybody who might be missing someone who might have already crossed over. Will, and a lot of us have experienced that, and so we know for sure we'll see you soon, sooner than you think, I think. One more, and then I'll bring the guys on, and I might close a little early tonight, but I'm going to play one more of our new indie artists that the boys have really liked. And you can find her on Reverb Nation. But again, you do your Facebook.com and AURYMOOREBAND Ari Mori Band. Oh, geez. I was supposed to be typing in the chat room here. Sorry, you guys. Ari Mori Band. And that's on Facebook, like I say, if you want to send her a note, and I'll type that again into the chat room in a minute. Or certainly, the facebook.com/AriMoreBand or AriMoreBand.com is her website. She's just about a month ago now had her breakout first CD, but she has music in the veins of her family. Her sister Pamela was the lead singer, has been the lead singer for Queensryche, and I believe a cousin of hers was one of the main players in the band Berlin. So she's got a lot of music in her family, certainly, but I didn't hear that. I heard Ari, and as it turns out, she lives up in Craig's neck of the woods, and she has got a huge heart. She's really sweet. So if you do find her on Facebook, be sure to thank her for letting us use her music, or letting Kim use her music on Brain Injury Radio. And she's a lot of fun. She's a little wilder than some of our, not quite as wild as Francis Jones and the Saviors, my Jersey boys. But in any case, here's Ari Mori with Do Be Gentle.
Go ahead and make my day. Go ahead and come my way. Push me to the limit and inch me beyond. Splash your holy water, sanctify me. Let me see God. I gotta believe. You're all that I wanted. I sit here and wait. Now that I have you, please hear me say, do be gentle with my heart. Do be gentle with your kiss. Broken all promises, then ran away. I gave him my heart, warm someone to hold. A pretty face, smiled fool's gold. Since then I learned to fear what love can hold. Whatever you do, dear, don't let your love grow cold. And to be gentle with my heart, and to be gentle with your kiss, forever love me. And hey, to be gentle with my kiss.
We have a sound effect that says, like in Hot. I think she's got a really sexy voice, kind of like an old Joplin type of voice. Anyway, that was Ari Moore, A-U-R-Y-M-O-O-R-E, Ari Moore, and Do Be Gentle. I think I'll go ahead and check in with the guys for a moment, see how they're doing as we're spinning the tunes. Boys, how you doing there?
Fine. If you want to have a sound effect for her, Kim, why don't you use the air horn? Number 9, I think it is, from the top of the page.
Because I'd have to scroll up, and I'm in my neighborhood now where things can be more easily accessed.
Well, the sound effects are more easily accessed from the top of the page, where they're all in numerical order, to make them all easy to find.
Yes, but yes. Where my sound stuff is at the bottom. But let's see, we were talking about this earlier.
I'll be back.
Yes.
And you found the sound effects, obviously.
We could give Ari...
You really
or really, in truth, what we could give her for some of those notes she hits would be.
Now you're really having some fun, aren't you? You're getting back at, especially Keith, because he loves his sound effects. I'm just kidding, Keith.
I know, he does. So now he's let me play in him. He's unleashed a monster.
Well, I put them for everybody. It's not me.
I didn't mean that one, folks.
That is amazing.
No, I think I prefer this one. That was a drag race car. Audience, I'd like to apologize for that. What I meant was...
Yeah. Keith is by saying yes to that one.
The smooth glide and whistle of the sports car. We like that a lot. Very good. Well, for coming up with that idea, that was really awesome.
Yes. You have to use these sound effects, you know, in the right context. We can't just play a whole series of sound effects. It's just not right. You have to have them in context with whatever's happening in the show.
No, I'm sorry. Now I've scrolled back down to where my songs are.
I think it's like... like a squeeze ball is for you for relief and pressure and stuff. I think she's using it like that.
We certainly have pressure today, haven't we?
It's her stress removal.
It's like a heat wave.
You know what I've got for that? I've got a little brain that you squeeze like that.
Yeah, from your doggone convention that I wish I could have gone to get my squeezy brain. And
don't forget, I got to meet the lashes.
I was in the convention at the weekend.
I posted that picture. I know. Did you learn anything good?
You did what about... Oh, sorry.
I'm not
he was
sure.
At a convention this weekend.
Yes. There was a lot of stuff, but there was also a heck of a lot of sitting on your ass. And when you're sitting on your backside for 10 hours, it gets really uncomfortable.
It really does. Conventions are long.
I start fidgeting. I can't keep still for 10 hours. I really start fidgeting.
Yeah,
well,
me
when
too.
When I went to the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina convention conference, one thing I did is I said, you know, I've got to get up. I'm getting stiff from sitting so long, and so between one of the classes, I just decided to go out and meet a lot of people, and it was really fun. Got to meet people from not just South Carolina, from Georgia and from North Carolina. They were coming from all over the place, different TBI survivors, different authors, all kinds of things. It was really pretty neat to do that, just to go out and wander around and bump into people you've never met before, and some I do know from different places I've been in South Carolina where they're bringing through support groups. It was really fun.
Just talking about meeting people, it just reminded me that a couple of weeks ago when I was in the streets of Croydon with Danny Shine, and his loud hailer, I was doing hypnosis on somebody, and I bumped into somebody on Sunday who said he saw me, and he thought that she'd fainted, and I was saving her life. Now, I can't work out what he's talking about, because why would she faint standing up? People fall down when they faint, don't they? But she was standing, and I hypnotized her when she was standing. I don't know if there's any idea she'd fainted.
Maybe she had amnesia like his show the other night.
That's what it was. And she forgot
she had hypnosis. I put her in hypnosis. That was good fun.
I'm totally
breaking the law, though, because the 1952 Hypnosis Act that we have over here forbids you from doing hypnosis anywhere on a street or in a public venue unless you've got a license from the council, which costs you hundreds of pounds. And you have to have £2 million worth of public liability insurance. So that means, by default, that if I go outside talking to anybody, because I have a hypnotic tone to my voice, I'm breaking the law if I speak to people. It's ridiculous law, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous law.
Yeah.
Certainly seems like it, yes.
Yeah. So if I get a license to hypnotize somebody, and then I move a couple of feet to the left or the right, I need a new license for that patch of ground. Because you're only licensed for one location. If you move your location, even if it's only a couple of feet, you need a new license.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
God, that
really
is crazy. Bad news.
Well,
I tell you, guys, one of them that I've never put in here before because I didn't write it down, but you can look these guys up on YouTube, and they look like party boys. They're nice. They're real nice, but they do funny videos, and he's got a great great sense of humor, and was very sweet when I was asking him about using music. But you guys have heard me often talk about Francis Jones and the Saviors. And here is, I put the Facebook page. I can finally tell you guys, silly guy, what he put. You do your facebook.com/drfrancisjones, Dr. Francis Jones. So he's being a smarty pants. Dr. V.R. Francis Jones. And this band is called Francis Jones and the Saviors. I'm not supposed to say that Frank is really Francis Jones and the Saviors, but this song is, you know, we talked about some of the parts, the hard parts, the challenging parts of grief, and sometimes there's beauty that comes out of every tragedy. It's just not so easy to see sometimes. But this is a song called Beautiful by Francis Jones and the Saviors. And if you're so inclined, drop him a note, Frank a note, telling him that thanks for letting Kim play your music on Brain Injury Radio, and your song Beautiful is really cool. One of the other songs I play on here a lot that you guys will find familiar is I Want to Be With You. But we'll do Beautiful.
You can come to me, I will understand. Sometimes things that shouldn't be are your only plans. And if you get scared, I will protect you. But don't expect an easy life. Nobody has ever got that right. And you can go away from me, I will understand. Sometimes the love that you believe is not the love that's in your hands. And if you get scared, I will protect you. Don't expect an easy life. Nobody has ever got that right. But it will be you, of course.
Jones and the Saviors with Beautiful. And we want to congratulate them for just having their first album come out. And you can look for them on Reverb Nation, if that's the place that you go. I'm pretty sure they do that too. Well, let's see. I want to thank all of our sponsors tonight. Gordon Johnson of TVILaw.com, of course, Lash Publishing, LAPublishing.com. I want to thank my guest tonight, the wonderful Janelle. I'm just not going to do it, but it is on my program page. And again, I want to thank all of our listeners for your support, and hope we're helping you as much as getting to serve you guys has been helping me. So, do you have any last words, Les Paul, Keith Anthony, before I just play a song out to the end?
Well, there is one person I'd like to say a few choice words to, but I'll refrain.
Okay, good.
If you get
my drift. It's been a pretty positive show so far, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's keep it that way then, so I'll refrain.
Yeah,
it's been a fabulous
good.
Show, really enjoyed it. Well done, Kim. You're
same here.
You're an awesome, awesome host, and don't let anyone take that away from you, no matter who they might be.
Thank you. I really appreciate
night.
That.
You have a great list of artists, Kim, because you do. You have a knack for picking a lot of different artists, but so does Keith. I'm behind you guys. I got to catch up some more.
Well, we all like music, so that's a cool thing. But I try to find music that's has some relation to the show and the way we're trying to go. Sometimes it's just for fun, and sometimes there's pertinent messages in those songs that we all go through, you know, like Find My Voice and Picture Me and Heroes. In fact, that's probably the song I'll fade out on. But in any case, I'd like to thank both of you guys for being here tonight. I think I'm blessed to have some great guests that make me look good, and I appreciate them for that. And some loyal friends here in Brain Injury Radio Network, and for that I am grateful. So I'm going to put my last link up in the chat room. If any of you are on Facebook thanking these people tonight, Facebook, you do your facebook.com/ Chris Dukes Band, ChrisDukesBand. Some of you might remember when I did my interview with Jaspin Booth on that FinalSaluteInc.org that I also had released a new artist to us anyway on Brain Injury Radio, Chris Dukes, and he had done a very awesome video on Heroes that I had posted around the time of that show. And so I think tonight we'll try to think about, we'll close the show. We were a little reflective, you know, talking about grief. Not every topic is a cartwheel, but it is reality, something that we all have to face. And so I think there's a couple different songs I could play for Chris Dukes. He has a great one, Heroes, and also Reasons and Greater Than Me. And I guess maybe that's what I'll close with tonight, is Chris Dukes singing Greater Than Me, because I've got to believe there's something greater than me, or I wouldn't have made it through that grief process, wouldn't have made it to where I'm sitting today, and is what makes me put on my game face every day. So having a power greater than me is a true blessing, and Chris Dukes is going to sing about it, and I'm just going to let the show play out with that. thank you so much for everything today, you guys. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the audience.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks. Good night, you guys.
Good night.
Can get so rough. What have I gotten?